Hello there, and welcome to the Truly Horrible NBA podcast. It's an exciting podcast today because it's our very first live podcast where we're both in the same location. Daniel, how are you today?
I'm doing really well. I'm here in beautiful Mendota Heights, Minnesota. Just enjoying the lovely seasonal weather. And I'm excited because, you know, there was this little NBA draft lottery event kind of thing that they held the other night. I don't know if you heard about that, but, you know, it really revealed kind of the next chapter of what's going to happen to several of the franchises that we cover here on this podcast. So, I mean, that in and of itself was incredibly exciting.
Yeah, I mean, my big takeaway from the draft lottery, I think there was, you know, one big winner from the draft lottery, and it's this podcast. You know, no other team, no other podcast, no one else in the world went 3 for 3, but that's we true. Went 3 for 3.
I haven't seen any of the major news outlets covering that.
Yeah.
It's weird. My mentions and Google alerts have been pretty static, but maybe it'll just start to build that moment, truly horrible podcast momentum.
It's classic mainstream media not giving credit where credit's due.
That's so true, dude. Ugh. Well, that's why independent sources like this podcast exist.
Exactly. I
mean, we're not bought and paid for.
Yeah, give the real news out to the people. But so starting, I guess, you know, so the draft lottery, just to recap what happened, the Suns got the first pick, the Kings got the second pick, and the Hawks got the third pick. Moving the Grizzlies to the fourth pick, the Mavs to the fifth pick, the Magic to the sixth pick, the Bulls to the seventh pick, the Nets to the eighth pick, and since that's where our teams end, we don't really care, but then it goes Knicks,
there will
Sixers.
Be more picks after that.
Yeah, more picks made after that, hopefully by some of our teams.
We're expecting this draft to have 60 picks.
Yeah, but could be more, could be less. So just starting off with the Suns, I mean, clearly the biggest winner besides us in the lottery, you know, getting the number one overall pick.
Anytime you can get the number one overall pick, you got to be happy about that.
Yeah. And now I guess they're left with a tough decision. You know,
it's such a weird decision, dude. We've never seen anything like this in the NBA. It's like, why did they hire Doncic's coach, who he had such a relationship with, before they knew what pick they were going to have? It really speaks to the fact that they like Doncic. But at the same time, if you get the number one pick in this draft, it's like pretty clear that DeAndre Ayton, that's the consensus number one. That's the guy who you're going to be questioned for the rest of his and your career if you don't take him, and he has an amazing career. And he's played his college ball in the state where your team plays. It's like such compelling reasons to take both of the top two guys at number one, but I just really don't think you can justify taking Luka over Ayton. You can't let that, you know, Ayton really seems like he could be a transformative player. I don't think either of us thinks anyone in this draft is definitely a sure thing number one guy on a championship team, but Ayton seems like he could be the most likely.
Yeah, so I guess for me, I kind of put together a list of like the signs pointing to them picking Ayton and the signs pointing to them picking Luka. And so with the signs picking Ayton, first of all, like the biggest hole on the roster is at center right now. I mean, I think we both like Bender a lot, but I think just looking at the roster, you say they really need a defensive presence to help cover up some of the issues with Booker, yeah. A big body, just like a big guy for the big man of the future.
I like Bender, but it's not like you let that be a deterrent from taking Ayton, yeah,
exactly.
Especially when you're as bad as the Suns.
Which is slightly disappointing, considering that he was the fourth pick 2 years ago. You really hope at this point he would be a big enough deterrent, but that's a sunk cost,
yeah,
at this point.
There's a big drop from the number one to the fourth, yeah, pick. It's counterintuitive, but there really is.
Yeah. Also, as you mentioned, he went to Arizona. I think stuff like that does matter. Robert Sarver went to Arizona. He's a big, you know, donor there as well. So, I mean, things like that matter.
I'm
when
sure
your owners,
he was watching them all year.
Absolutely.
You know?
Public opinion, as you said, slightly leans towards Ayton. And in the immediate aftermath of the lottery, there were reports coming out of Phoenix that Ayton was 100% the pick, which, you,
yeah,
know, when you're
we
really...
saw Devin Booker following Ayton on Instagram
the
night of the lottery.
Josh Jackson came out and said that he, like, wanted to have... They thought a real big guy could really help where the team was going, you know?
Hey, Luka Doncic is 6'8".
Yeah. Science
I don't think that's what he meant.
The signs point to Luka is, as you mentioned, Coach Igor. Just that it's strange to have hired... Look, maybe they viewed Coach Igor just by himself as worthy of the first pick, but it always was seemed like there was some connection to Doncic there. And then also Ryan McDonough came out and kind of gave an interview, and I thought gave some interesting quotes where he talked about both Ayton and Doncic and talked about both sides of the coin with Ayton, some of the real, like, he's a physical specimen, he really offers a lot, but also some of the downsides with his defensive instincts. And with Luka, he's mostly was positive, almost all positive, which is one of those, you know, kind of,
yeah,
subtle
things. That could
things.
Easily be a smokescreen, too,
yeah,
though.
But
I mean,
why are you smokescreening when you're the number one, have the number one overall pick?
Because
no teams
you want
do this
somebody to trade.
To trade up.
Well, also, I mean, look, It was really weird timing for this report from Luka, who everyone has been projecting to this NBA draft all season, and it hasn't even been a question if he'd come over. Then all of a sudden, right around the draft lottery, it's like, oh yeah, you know, I might just keep playing in Europe. Like, I don't need the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just...
Is that just he doesn't want to go to the Kings?
No, I think it's just he was heading in. I'm a pretty firm believer that he's heading into, like, the Final Four this weekend. They just played their Final Four game just earlier today, and he was just focused on that. He was not going to talk
about his
future.
And he needs... I mean, look, if you're a fan of Real Madrid, you know, you don't want your star player talking about the NBA and saying, I'm definitely gone, I can't wait to leave, right before potentially playing for a championship. I get that.
Yeah, and can, like, imagine if a prospect... said before the Final Four in the NCAA tournament that he was going to the
already,
NBA.
Yeah,
and like that,
true.
Everyone would eat them alive here. So I think we should
so
think
true.
About that
their
from the same
their team was still in the tournament.
Yep.
That would be hilarious, actually. I can't wait. That seems like, you know, like, if you're a consensus what a dud guy, and everyone knows you're a what a dud guy, you should be able to be allowed to say that you're leaving during the season. Like, you know, these
so
guys, Marvin Bagley shouldn't have to, after the game, be like, you know, I just really need some time to make this decision. No, the fuck you don't.
Yeah. Here's a question I have for you. Does the Suns having Coach Igor as their coach make you feel more confident if they choose to pass on Doncic at one?
Why would it make me more confident when the only thing I know about this guy as a coach is that he has a relationship with Luka Doncic? Like, I don't know anything about his coaching philosophy. I don't know anything really about his specific track record. I mean, I'm a fan of new blood. I'll definitely give him a chance. But the only, knowing as little as I do about him, the only potential upside right now would be his relationship with Luka.
But I guess the argument being you're more confident because if a guy who has this close relationship with Luka, who spent a lot of time working with him, ultimately is part of the decision-making team that decides not to pick him, doesn't that in some ways make you feel more comfortable about passing on him at one if you're a Suns fan?
It might, yeah. He knows him better than anyone kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I also sincerely question the extent to which he's part of the decision-making process as a brand new coach.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure... if he were the sole decision maker, he'd take Luka.
Yeah.
I'd be really surprised if he didn't. But he also probably hasn't hardly watched Arizona. And, you know, his job is not to focus on college basketball. So that's probably why he's not really consulted in that decision. But it is interesting to think about, for sure. It also suggests, right, like, say this guy is like an unqualified coach, but he's just riding the fact that he has this relationship with your star player that, and that gives him job security he doesn't warrant. It kind of, if he like doesn't have Luka with him, it forces him to like sink or swim on his own a little more and not just sort of ride the coattails of that relationship.
Very true. Very true. Just dipping back into the whole, I don't think it meant anything, but there's a lot of internet buzz about what Luka said and everything. And there's been a vein of the internet that believes that Luka is trying to angle his way to the Suns in addition to them taking Ayton. So the idea being that the Suns would take Ayton at one and then make a trade with the Kings for the number two pick, involving some combination of the assets they have with, you know, 16, 31, their pick next year.
So we don't think there's any way Luka gets past two, do we? It's pretty hard to imagine. I mean, the Kings, come on, they got to swing for the fences. They need a star. They've even got the, like, Vlade connection.
I'd be really surprised. I think most of the consensus... is that it's a two-player draft and then it drops off. Look, Jay Billis had his rankings up during the draft combine, and he had Luka's
Jay
fourth.
Billis had Bagley at two. Like,
yeah,
come on. We get it, dude. You went to Duke like a million years ago.
Right. So, I would be really surprised if those aren't the first two picks. It seems like the consensus all year has been those are the two guys. Those are the two guys. It seems like there will be some talk over the next, you know, month or so in the draft silly season about it not being the case. You'll see a few mocks where Luka falls to five, maybe, or something like that.
I like Jackson and Bamba a lot. I think those guys, it's clear to project a role for them in the NBA, but I still think a primary ball handler is so hard to find that you can't pass on Luka Doncic.
Yeah. So, but if you're the Suns and you had the option to trade up for two, what is the max you would give up to move up to number two?
Give me a list of the assets.
Okay.
I'm definitely not giving them the Heat pick. I'm probably not giving them my next year's pick. If I am, it's going to have some protections on it.
Right, so
but I think almost anything else could be on the table, even Josh Jackson.
Yeah, so the idea being the main assets that I think about as being possible trade chips are Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender, the 16th pick this year in the draft, the Bucks pick next year, the Suns pick next year, and then that 2021 Heat pick. Those are the main assets.
So I would say out of Jackson, Bender, the 16,
and the Bucks pick. I might try to tell them they could pick one of Jackson and Bender and one of those two picks. That might not be enough, but then I'm ready to throw in the other pick too. And that still might not be enough, but at that point, if you're the Kings, you can sell that as like, we're getting back a guy who was just picked really high in a draft and still has a bunch of potential, plus two other picks we can use on. The problem is, the Kings have so many guys who project to be at least decent role players and no potential stars that a mid-first really is not that useful to them, given their team position.
I just don't think there's a great fit for that trade as much as, like, so I think actually in, like, a value proposition-wise, like, trading the number two pick for Josh Jackson and 16 is actually pretty good value, or at least fairly close to good value, or Josh Jackson 16 and the Bucks pick, maybe, let's say. Like, that's the
combination.
Once you
get all three of those, you start to be pretty happy about that.
But I just don't see the Kings making that move, and any more than that from the Suns, I just don't like to deplete their asset base that much. So I don't think there's a great fit for that, but I do think it's an interesting idea, because if you actually have a core of Doncic, Booker, and Ayton, like, you kind of worry about everything else later.
You can fill in the blanks around that, but yeah, all right. I doubt it'll happen.
Let's move on to the Kings then. First, I just want to say, like, it's great to see the Kings gain the number two pick. Like, they needed
the Kings
a break like this.
Franchise, this is why I want them to keep the pick, because they just need something to feel good about. And just imagine if Luka comes in there and he's playing well, or at least exciting right away. I mean, we remember, we both were in Minnesota during Ricky Rubio's rookie season, and we're hoping Luka has a much better career than Ricky Rubio, but Rubio was just so exciting at the very start. And, like,
and Rubio,
he played with the joy, he could pass the ball so well.
And look, I always wonder what Rubio could have been if he hadn't torn his ACL in that rookie
that
year.
That injury, like 15 games in, he was playing so confidently before that, and afterwards, when he came back, he always seemed a little more hesitant.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, with the Kings, like, I think Luka could be a real culture changer. Like,
you'd have to hope so.
Some people don't like his, like, emotion on the court and how, like, frustration he shows and everything.
Yeah,
and how
he's
intense
really demonstrative.
But you know what? A team like the Kings, where there's just, like, a losing culture, and look, I'm not this guy, like, I'm not the type who believes that a losing culture just sticks around forever. I think a losing culture exists, but once you start to win, a losing culture fades. But sometimes it's nice to have a catalyst to jumpstart that things away from
I
that losing
so
culture.
Too.
And I think a guy like Luka could be a perfect, you know, antidote to that.
And it's just like, for the rest of their young players, he's going to be able to get them their ball and get them the shots that they need. He's not too ball dominant, and, like, you know, he can play off of Buddy Hield. It doesn't spell, we're talking about this earlier before we started the pod, that we think Luka and De'Aaron Fox is, like, basically a non-starter. It's not going to work. Maybe they should try to trade Fox. Maybe they should just try to, like, you know, give them both looks for now, because you never know, kind of thing, and, like, sometimes play them together, but try to mostly stagger their minutes. Fox, it's not like Fox is a useless player. I see him probably as, like, a decent starter at the high end of his potential and a decent backup at the low end of his potential. But that's not a guy who you worry about if you have the number two pick, really.
Yeah.
It's not a great investment, return on investment for the pick they used on him, but it's a sunk cost at this point.
Yeah, my concern with Fox is just that he's, like, look, he's not a good enough off-ball shooter yet. He's the type of guy who needs the ball in his hands. And I'm just not sure he's a good enough player to ultimately be a guy who can have the ball in his hands for a 50-60 win team. And that's the concern.
There's
ultimately
so few of those guys in the world.
Right.
That's the thing.
Exactly. Like, and so just spending the fifth pick, we talk a lot, you know, spending a fifth pick on non-transcendent point guards or a top lottery pick on non-transcendent guys who need the ball is almost always a mistake, because they ultimately limit your ceiling. And that's not what you want to do. It's interesting. We've spent this entire discussion about the Kings talking about them getting Luka as if Ayton to the Suns is a done deal, even though we did talk, like, we seem to think it's Ayton leaning there.
It does, right? Like, well, look, if the Suns do take Luka and the Kings, then it's a no-brainer for the Kings to take Ayton. It would make me very concerned about Ayton's development path, because he does seem like a guy who, like, has the potential to go astray and to just, like, cut corners. It's not a team with a winning culture that's going to hold him accountable, and he's so raw still. I mean, he barely knows how to set a screen. Like, Ayton needs a lot of fundamental training and just has insane natural gifts right now. And Sacramento maybe doesn't seem like the place to maximize his potential.
Yeah, I have to be honest.
But he's still, that potential is so high that it might work anyway.
Yeah.
It could be DeMarcus Cousins 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm the Kings, if Doncic is there and the Suns take Ayton, I romp to the podium and I take Doncic and I just am like, this, let's do this. Like, this is great. I, like, love him. If the Suns take Doncic, though, and Ayton's there,
you're taking calls?
Is that what you're
going to say? I'm taking calls. I'm trying to leverage.
Somebody might fall in love with Ayton.
The value of Ayton, I'm trying to trade down because I just don't love. I think Ayton is a piece that comes in near the end of a rebuild when there's already some guys there who are more ball dominant guys. Because my concern with Ayton actually is he comes into a situation where they ask him to do everything on offense and it just lets
their offense is just like left block, shitty post up looks.
And more like. Even more detrimental is that he doesn't ever focus on defense. In almost similar way to what happened with Carl Towns here in Minnesota, is you bring in a guy who has the possible two-way potential, you know, has some issues, but when they really focus in on one side, focusing on the offense because there's no one else really there to do it.
They have to carry the offensive load. Their defense is going to suffer. Yeah, and Ayton's defense is probably not going to be good regardless, but I see what you're saying. If like, he's looked to as a go-to guy from day one, 20, 25 shots a game, he's going to be a horrible defender.
I like the chances of Ayton becoming a better defender playing next to Devin Booker, who's like taking a huge offensive load off him, way more than I do on the Kings.
He definitely won't learn anything about how to play good defense from watching Devin Booker.
Definitely not.
But I get what you're saying.
So I have a question. We talked kind of in our very first podcast, we ranked where every team stood, and we had the Kings as the worst situation, worse than the Nets. Does the Kings getting the number two pick here make them now a better situation than the Nets? Does the difference between that seventh pick and the two pick? Yeah, I agree.
It might even lift them above the Magic.
I kind of think it does too. We'll get to the Magic.
We're gonna have to have a come to Jesus talk about the Magic.
The poor Magic. Let's move to the Hawks now. Look, nice for the Hawks to jump up to number three. It's a bummer. I mean, look, the third pick here is clearly slightly less valuable than the one and two, just because
You never want to have the third pick in a two-player draft. Because you don't get those top two, but you can also look at it like they get their pick of everyone else in the draft besides Doncic and Ayton.
Look, I follow some people who talk about Jaren Jackson Jr. as if he's in that Ayton Doncic tier.
Yeah, people really like him, and Bamba is soaring as well. I think the whole 3 through 9 part of the draft is really
clustered,
but it's nice if you're Atlanta to have your pick of those guys.
So if you're the Hawks, who would you take given their situation?
I would take Jaren Jackson Jr.
Okay.
I think that his like potential to be a sort of stretch five versatile two-way big in the modern NBA just means that he's all around the third best prospect in this draft. And if you're the team like the Hawks that doesn't have any building blocks, you don't really even need to worry that much about fit. But also, I like his fit, at least with, you know, most of their team. But I'm not even really sure if anyone on their team right now is going to continue to be on their team when Jaren Jackson Jr. is in his prime. So it might just not matter.
Yeah.
But so that's what I would take.
For me, I think I look at three prospects as the main three I would be thinking about. Mm-hmm. And that's Jaren Jackson Jr., Michael Porter, and Trae Young. With all of these, the point being that I view all these guys as having really high ceilings.
Yeah, Jaren Jackson. Those aren't like guys who are projecting as role players. No. Those are boomer bust guys.
Yep. Look, you said everything. I agree with everything you said about Jackson. Michael Porter, look, he was a consensus. He was the consensus top pick in this draft before he missed the entire year with his back injury and everything. And he could be that like scoring wing, has some playmaking ability and everything. Like the comparison people are kind of floating around. Once again, it's mostly based off high school. We didn't see him at all in college. I think anything that happened in his two games in college, you can throw out. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, after sitting out the year playing against guys who had been playing the whole time, those aren't worthwhile.
But the comparison is Tracy McGrady, which, look, if he ends up being Tracy McGrady, that's... Look, I don't actually think that's a great comparison,
but look, as a guy who can actually like just kind of single-handedly manufacture offense for you, who can create good looks off the dribble, who can hit open spot-up threes. I mean, if he can score... Look, it depends on what team he's on, but I could definitely see him being on a team that encourages him to try to flesh out his mid-range game, which, as an analytically minded fan, you know, I'm like, you better be careful, tread lightly, but he seems like the kind of guy who could get good enough in the mid-range to where it's not a bad option.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, so I think there's a lot to like with Porter. And then Trae Young, the basic point is just, look, if he is just someone who's able to shoot from 28 feet, and that's a huge threat, you have to like take care of all the time and everything, and if he can get stronger when he gets into the league and his defense can go from just like a huge liability to just like not great at the point guard position, that's not a big deal. And look, he actually does a really good job getting teammates involved. He created so many open shots for guys in Oklahoma, they were just didn't make any of them. So I think his upside is really, really appealing to me. But the other guy I really like for them, but I just think it's a reach at three, is Wendell Carter Jr. That's a guy who I really like.
Carter Jr. is going to be good. I mean, like I was saying, the Hawks are in that position where it's hard to predict what they're going to do because they don't have anything in place right now, and they have their pick of a bunch of guys who we all kind of think are somewhat similar. So as long as they don't go totally out of left field, I mean, I don't think either of us would want to see them take Bagley
just because we worry about his fit and what position he plays in the league. The fact that he doesn't seem like he's going to be a good defender or a good outside shooter. And it's not like he has a huge physical advantage over guys in the NBA. Yep. It's like, what's his path? But other than Bagley, it's hard to imagine them making a pick at three that we wouldn't at least feel okay about.
Yeah, I agree. But I actually, how I feel about the Hawks is I think they should try to trade down. I just think we just named off four guys who we would sort of like to see them take there.
So you should trade down. Yeah, kind of depends, right? But maybe if another team, one of the other teams in that same range, falls in love with the guy and really they want to make sure that they get Mo Bamba
or Jaren Jackson or whatever. Like, yeah. I think that's a really appealing path for the Hawks. And look, the Hawks, they hired Lord Pierce. We talked about that a little in our first pod. We like that fit a lot. Look, it seems like they're in this for the long run. Hawks really seem to be about to, you know, process, as the cliche word would be, or whatever. Yeah. Like, looks like they don't think they're just going to be competing next year or even really the year after that.
They're trying to bottom out.
Which the move then is maybe to trade down here, pick up future assets. Look, if they can trade down with the Magic at six and pick up the Magic's first next year, maybe, or something like that.
I mean, that would be awful for the Magic, but I get what you're saying. But the way the trades happen now, it would be like a pick with some weird, complicated protections that could eventually become unprotected in 2022, but maybe it will. Right. But like that, yeah. I see the outline for something there, and it doesn't have to be the Magic. It could be the Bulls. It could be the Knicks.
Yep.
It could be the Sixers. Yeah, there's plenty of teams with questionable front offices that are in the lottery that might want to trade up for a higher lottery pick.
Yep. And yeah, and then touching back to what you said with Bagley, when I clear, I think Bagley can be good. I think you are lower on Bagley than I am because I think that outside shot can develop. I worry about him defensively. But
he basically has to be like a stretch four.
He has to be a four. That's the secret. I love him on the Knicks at nine. Put him next to Porzingis. That's the one wonderful fit
I can see working with him for him, because, and maybe you can even kind of like convince Kristaps that actually Bagley is the five.
Yeah.
But really, Kristaps is clearly the one who you have closer to the rim on most defensive possessions.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kristaps could cover up for some of his inadequacies. It just doesn't seem like he's going to be big or physical enough to guard fives, and he's probably going to be too slow, at least to guard perimeter-oriented fours.
Yep. And then one other thing that the Hawks should touch on is just the whole Dennis Schroeder, in essence, trade request. Can we go that far yet?
I would say, like, departure, like, public admonishment, hissy fit. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. Dennis Schroeder really just publicly called out and distanced himself from the Hawks this week. And you know what, Dennis? We don't need you.
Yeah,
also, we're not going to miss you over here in Hawksland.
Do you know who else doesn't need you, Dennis? The Pacers. I can't believe you think you could help the Pacers win.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've seen a lot of guys in NBA history get frustrated with being on bad teams. I get it. I respect that. You're a competitor. But you got to be a professional, too. And the Hawks are paying you a lot of money, man. And they're paying you more money than you're worth right now.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's going to be this market of good team suitors for him. I mean, what team would even benefit? He's also what plays the deepest position in the NBA. Like, definitely not even an average. He's in that bottom third in terms of starting point guards. I don't think there's any question.
Look, I think a team that could be a candidate to trade for him is another one of our teams, the Suns. Just because Elfrid Payton actually reminds me a lot of Dennis Schroeder, and they clearly liked him as like a possibility. So maybe they view like trading the 16th pick for Dennis Schroeder like as a possibility. Maybe it's they trade the 16th pick and Brandon Knight for Dennis Schroeder or something like that. I don't know exactly. Maybe 16 and 31. You know, it's hard to tell exactly what the combination of assets would be.
Might get something smaller back. I get what you're saying there.
But yeah, I think that's really with the Hawks. I think I'm really going to be talking a lot about trying to trade down just because I think that it's a cluster 3 through 9, and there's no reason to pick up the top of the cluster when you can pick up
personally,
assets.
Personally, see, I think Jackson is worth staying at 3-4.
Yep, and that's fair. And I like Jackson. I just don't like him as he's just not – he hasn't differentiated himself for me from the rest of that enough pack enough. Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
And then let's move on to the Magic. So my first note on the Magic is the poor Magic. My second note on the Magic is the poor, poor Magic.
Look, you're definitely not making the playoffs next year, Magic, so maybe this will be the year that you finally jump up and get like a real top-tier lottery pick, but it's just yet another year of picking in the 5, 6, 7 range, and it's just brutal. It really starts to weigh on you. It's like a treadmill team, but you don't even have the success of a treadmill team.
Yeah, and they just, I mean, they move down, just moving down from 5 to 6. Like, every little bit, that hurts. You know what I mean? Look, it's not the end of the world in any way, but it's... You would rather have the fifth pick than the sixth pick.
One more team that's picking ahead of you.
And it's just like the fact that you couldn't move from 5 into the top 3 again. Like, it's just, look, the odds weren't in their favor, but the fact that it didn't happen is still just, it's disappointing. Yeah. You want that.
The silver lining is because of the depth of that pool that we were talking about, they're going to be able to get one of those guys, and they're probably going to get somebody who at least has some star potential. We don't really know. It's like, do you worry about Aaron Gordon or not when you're thinking about their plans? You definitely have to factor in Jonathan Isaac. It's way too early to not be thinking about Isaac. You know, like, I wouldn't want to take a guy I couldn't envision playing with Isaac. But let's say Gordon's gone. Then it starts to become really intriguing to me to take a Mo Bamba if he's still there. Yeah. Because Bamba and Isaac together on the same front line, that's so long. That's a problem for people on defense. Granted, I don't know who's going to score on that team. But you can't, I don't think, take... It's hard to take any front court player
with if you're going to keep Gordon
and Isaac both around, and your hope is to play both of those guys, which I wish that would work. I like the idea of them playing together in like a NBA 2K fantasy kind of sense, but it doesn't really seem good from... I mean, we just haven't seen enough of Isaac in general to know if that's going to work.
And it's tough because I sort of view both Gordon and Isaac as fours. It kind of seems like that's what they both are.
Or tiny short-term fives.
Yeah. Right, but they can't play five all game. No. Neither of them can be the starting five.
Or even probably like in your rotation night in and night out as a five.
It's like
a lineup you unlock when you need break in case of emergency.
A playoff lineup, actually, for the most part.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Can you play Jonathan Isaac, Aaron Gordon, and Mo Bamba together?
If you
don't care about ever scoring. I mean, look, Gordon's three-point shooting improved. Look, he started off really hot last year and then regressed down. You know, he's just like an adequate three-point shooter at this point, but maybe that improves. And maybe Jonathan Isaac, look, we haven't seen enough. What if he becomes a knockdown three-point shooter too?
Yeah.
And Mo Bamba.
It's still like, where's like the issue? It's not just threes, though. Like, I do think Mo Bamba's stretching the floor. Yeah, there's no creation on that team
right now. Which is why the guy I like for them is I really like Trae Young there.
Trae Young is available, I was going to bring him up as a potential guy too, but he's a guy who needs his own team, and right now the Magic are just definitely no one's team.
Yes.
So it seems like a good fit. I wouldn't want him, Trae Young, to go somewhere, you know, say he were to fall to the Knicks somehow. Be kind of uncomfortable worrying about how Young and Ntilikina were going to coexist. If I had any other young guards, I would be concerned about how they would be a fit with Trae Young, because he is such a unique, and at least from what we've seen, so ball-dominant player. That might work, it might not, but you, in order to really see if it works, you kind of need him to be playing with mostly complementary guys, I think.
Yep, and I just, at this point in time, I don't think the Magic can be thinking about Evan Fournier in any way as blocking any pick.
They should be trying to trade Evan Fournier. Yes, I think absolutely. We've said that about them previously. We'll probably say it again in the future, that if you're really, really bad, you got to trade those veterans that might have value to good teams, try to get some picks.
Wendell Carter is just another guy. Once again, we both like him. We view him. We talk about him as being like Al Horford, and you see the way Al Horford's playing in the playoffs. Even though we don't watch the playoffs, you know, you just hear reports. Because
all we do is, you know, we're just watching the combine, talking about the draft. Yep. We only care about the bad teams. But from what I've heard about the playoffs, it sounds like Al Horford's been pretty good this year.
Yeah.
So maybe Wendell Carter could kind of be like that in the NBA. He's so smooth. He's got a huge body, projects to be really good on defense, and is just like composed. And especially for how young he is. He's one of the youngest guys in that group, isn't he?
Super young, yep. And then who I don't like for the Magic, and once again, this is not because I don't like him as a player, but I don't like the Bagley fit because I view him, once again, as a four, and then suddenly like your three most promising pieces on the team are all fours,
together.
And they can't
play
together.
I think this would work, especially if the talent is what it could be, but I worry about Michael Porter going there too.
Yes, agreed, because Michael Porter, the hope for him, I think, is he plays the three. That's what your goal is. I do worry a little he might not be quite quick enough to play the three.
And well, right now, I mean, if they don't trade Fournier or if they don't trade some of these guys, he might just get buried. Like, I don't know. It's hard to tell what's going to happen, but also the Magic need some shot creation, so Trae Young makes a lot of sense.
The other guy I think is a possibility, and this is a guy I'm not a big fan of, but who I think really thinking is a real possibility of the pick, is Sexton out of Alabama.
True. And personally, I wouldn't even consider taking Sexton that high because I don't trust his jump shot, even though I really liked watching him play and I'll probably continue to root for him in the NBA. He strikes me, the comp that I just keep coming back to is Marcus Smart.
So interesting, he reminds me so much of De'Aaron Fox. There's like, I mean, look, he's a little longer, but like they just remind me a lot of each other.
And both of those guys were so good in college. And they were just a joy to watch in college, the same way Sexton was this year. But it's hard. You have to be so insanely athletic to still be athletically dominant in the NBA.
And once again, you have to be so good with the ball in your hands and just offer such...
It's got to be on a string. Yeah.
And you have to just be able to create for others so well to be the predominant ball handler on a championship team. You know, we look, ultimately, like, even John Wall, as amazing as he is, we're sort of seeing the ceiling of what a team can do when John Wall has the ball in his hands.
And the fact that you have to pay John Wall as much as you do to have him on your team means that you might not win shit with John Wall.
Yep. I think we should address quickly with the Magic. You know, it's not totally lottery related, but there's a, it really sounds like Kelvin Sampson is gaining a lot of steam as the head coach candidate.
No! Dude, I don't want any part of Kelvin Sampson. What has he even been up to? I remember when he was, like, estranged from the NCAA for his recruiting violations.
Yeah.
And he's, what, he's been, like, an assistant now since then?
So he was an NBA assistant for 6 years, and now he actually, after his NCAA suspension, he was suspended for 5 years. He's back
in college.
He went back to the University of Houston, and they've actually had a fair amount of success.
Yeah, they were good this year. Oh my god, I remember seeing that he was their coach this year, actually, at the start of the tournament. Now that you bring that up, and being like, those wins are getting vacated.
Yeah.
But hey, they don't vacate wins in the NBA. You're allowed to pay your players. So maybe he'll be better.
Yeah, my issue with Sampson is just that he's 62 years old. He'd be the fourth oldest coach in the league.
And he's never been a coach. You probably don't want a 62-year-old working and learning on the fly as your head coach.
That's my issue.
No offense to all of our 62-year-old listeners.
Yeah, that's my issue with it. I look, and once again, I generally refrain from making judgments about who's going to be a good NBA coach until they've actually been an NBA coach.
That's how I feel about Igor. And even Kelvin, like, if he's good, I'd be into it, you know.
But it's just hard to see him growing with a young team. Yeah. You know, you hire Kelvin Sampson if you actually think, this guy, like, there's something about him that could really just, like, drive a veteran team to, like, you know, contention status because he's old enough, but he's not going to be able to grow
with
this
team. Not going to be able to coach for them, even if they did somehow, like, everything goes right and they want to keep him around and it's going great. What do you get out of him? 5-6 years and he's got to retire.
Yep. So that's not a fan of that hire at all. And look, Greg Popovich came out a couple months ago, and, like, you've seen reports about how he really likes Kelvin Sampson. He's done work with the Spurs. Like, Popovich is really high on him, but you know what? It's still about, you want young guys to grow with young teams and everything. Yeah. That's
also
why,
like, what? So just half the league at a certain point is going to be coached by a Greg Popovich acolyte. Like, they can't all be good. We've seen it a million times. It's just because somebody has the endorsement of somebody who's good doesn't necessarily mean that they themselves are good.
Yep. Final thing with the Magic, I guess we should touch on, is that Aaron Gordon liked a post on Instagram about him signing with the Pacers.
It could be writing on the wall, but the Magic do have matching rights, so any team that would want Aaron Gordon, it's going to take something to get him. I'm sure the Magic would match up to the max. You can't lose a player like that for nothing.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because in a typical, like, free agency, so, like, DeMarcus Cousins just, like, unfollowed the Pelicans and followed Paul George and Julius Randle. Yeah,
and that he's gone.
So that actually
That's
interesting. So that actually struck me much more as a leverage play. He's trying to get more money out of the Pelicans. They're kind of probably being a little stingy in the contract negotiation, come up the Achilles time thing. And you do something like that in unrestricted free agency to get leverage. In restricted free agency, though, your leverage is really just you sign an offer sheet and you have to match or not. And so there's not that same incentive structure for Aaron Gordon to, like, create leverage by doing that. Which makes me think he really does just want out of Orlando, in which case...
I can't really think of a reason for him to want in Orlando, based on everything that's happened in the time he's been there.
Yeah.
So that's rough, but he will probably be there.
Yeah.
I still think they'll keep him around.
And then, so then my final note on the Magic was just the poor, poor Magic.
Yeah. Well, hey, things will get better. That's the thing about being truly horrible in the NBA.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Timberwolves or the Kings, it usually gets better.
Yeah. And you know what? Ultimately, hopefully what they do is they take this opportunity, they trade away some, you know, like Evan Fournier. They really tear it down. They really suck next year. And it's just,
I mean,
like,
can you imagine how bad? Say they do draft Trae Young and just, like, give Trae Young the keys all year. They're going to win 19 games.
Yes. But it'll be such a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
And, like,
just rookie point guards are horrible.
Always horrible. Always, always, always horrible. Yeah. Except, you know, Donovan Mitchell, actually. But
he
was kind of started as a shooting guard and then he got more ball handling responsibilities.
And they often played him with other ball handlers. He also was in a system. I mean, there are other rookie point guards who have been solid, especially guys with good pieces around them. But almost every year we see high-drafted guys we're really excited about struggle immensely in their first year at the point guard position and then still become good a few years later.
Yep. And then our final team, the Nets, they don't have their pick, of course. I would say they're a winner, though, because their pick didn't move up and they didn't give away another high pick.
It was only the 10th pick. That was one of the goals for the Nets this season, is just be good enough to not be a punchline once the draft rolls around. And hey, they finally have fulfilled all their obligations.
Yep.
Well, I guess it's not really official until after the draft, but still, this was another step towards fulfilling all the obligations, putting that terrible dark period in behind them, and moving forward as a franchise.
It's the 8th pick. The 10th pick is the Lakers going to the Sixers, 8th to the Cavs.
Very
but
true.
Still, look, so much better to give up the 8th pick than the 3rd pick again or the 1st pick or that stuff. Right. Like, you know what? Like,
and especially given how these picks were talked about for years, they weren't talked about like it was going to be the 8th pick.
No, they were talked about,
it's definitely a top 4 or 5 pick.
And so, look, you got to be happy about that as a Nets fan. And as you said, like, this period is behind. Like, you have your pick next year.
Sean Marks running the show.
Sean Marks, who is just like, look, I have more confidence in Sean Marks than I do in any other GM running any of our teams right now by a substantial margin. Oh, he's done really smart stuff.
That would be kind of interesting. What's the ranking for GM confidence out of these 5 teams?
That's tough. So I would have to say, so Sean Marks, number
Nets
one.
Nets one.
Probably McDonough, too. As crazy as it is.
He's got a wide range, but at least has made some good moves.
Yep.
Right? And then the Magic, we don't know anything about them, but we're scared of them.
Hawks,
they might hire Kelvin Sampson.
The Hawks management.
We don't know much about the Hawks, except that, well, is this the same Hawks management that didn't trade Millsap?
No, new, because that was back
it's like really new.
Yeah.
So what is they? We'll do a whole podcast on the Hawks and go through it, but it's hard to be that confident. The Kings might be 3, just because we think that they're not that crazy dumb anymore. I don't know. I guess we should still.
Yeah.
Let's not even assign rankings.
Let's
just say that
the
Nets are clearly 1 and the Suns are 2.
Yeah. All right. And that's all we have. We're going to drop another podcast coming up, kind of do another deep dive into the rebuild history, but we just want to, you know, touch base, kind of look at what happened with the lottery.
Yeah, thanks for listening. It was a fun lottery.
And follow for more draft content. You know, our teams, we have 5 teams that we care about here that are going to be heavily featured in the draft.
This is one of the best times of the year if you follow a bad team.
Yep. And, you know, subscribe on iTunes. Make sure to leave a 5-star rating.
Hey, we'll take 4 stars. Look, if you only think it's 4 stars, that's fine. Just don't go any lower than 4. It's like Uber.
Yeah, exactly. Also, if you have any friends' phones laying around, if you like, just say, I need to send a text real quick, hop onto the podcast app. 5 stars. Doesn't take any time, you know. Just spread the love. So thank you, and see you guys soon.
Thanks for listening.